Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're here to sift through the sources you send us and pull out the really actionable stuff.
That's the plan.
Today, we're tackling a giant, Aramco. I mean, we're talking the world's largest oil company, huge valuation.
Just massive.
And the question we keep seeing is pretty basic, right? Can I or how can I invest in something like Aramco? It feels almost untouchable for many.
It really does. And that's the core of our deep dive today. We're looking at the sources to give you that shortcut. We
Okay.
want to cut through the noise, lay out the actual steps. Who's eligible? Especially, if you're investing from outside Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, the eligibility seems complex.
It is. And the risks. We absolutely have to talk about the risks. And crucially, how you might balance out that kind of specific exposure, maybe with alternatives.
Right. So we're pulling together insights on everything from like the practicalities of the total exchange to why diversification is just non-negotiable here. The mission is clarity, not confusion.
Exactly. Let's get into it.
So first off, why Aramco? What's the big pull? It's not exactly your standard tech stock, yet investors, both new and experienced, seem fascinated.
Well, it's interesting. The sources point out you're not just acquiring stock, you're acquiring a kind of a unique geopolitical asset.
Geopolitical asset.
Yeah. And there are really five big reasons for the appeal that come up again and again.
Okay, let's hear them.
Number one, global influence. Simple as that. Aramco is central to the world's oil supply. Investing means getting direct exposure to global energy markets.
And they have that famously low cost of production, right?
Precisely. That gives them incredible leverage, especially against, say, higher cost producers like North American shale. That low cost feeds directly into number two, their strong financial position.
Makes sense. Consistent profits, revenue.
Yeah, long-term stability, relatively speaking. But the third point is maybe the most distinct: government support.
Ah, the Saudi government being the majority owner.
Exactly. But it's more than just ownership. It often means things like production quotas, strategic direction from the Public Investment Fund, the PIF.
Which gives it a unique kind of stability.
It does. A structural backing most public companies just don't have. But,
There's a flip side. That tie-in means decisions might not always be purely about profit for shareholders. Could be national policy driving things.
that's the inherent tension, absolutely. You get the reliability, but you also accept that political factors can sometimes, well, override pure economics. We'll
Oh.
definitely dig into that in the risks section.
Okay, so what are the last two?
Pretty standard, actually. Fourth is dividend potential. Aramco is known for paying out significant dividends, which attracts income investors.
Right.
And fifth, it's strategic importance. They're constantly investing, keeping themselves relevant even as the energy world shifts, trying to ensure they're profitable for a long time.
So the takeaway seems to be huge scale, financial strength, government backing,
Yeah.
but that very prominence makes accessing it a bit tricky.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Which leads us right into the practical side.
Okay, let's get practical. We see the appeal, but how do you actually, buy in? Who can even do this, especially if you're not living in Saudi Arabia? That whole tidal wool exchange thing seems like a major hurdle.
It can be. The rules are clear, but they differ quite a bit depending on who you are.
Right.
For Saudi residents, it's pretty straightforward. You need an account with the Tadawul, a valid ID, link a bank account, direct access. Simple enough.
Okay, standard procedure for locals, but for the rest of us.
For foreign investors, it gets more layered. Generally, you're looking at needing an international brokerage firm.
One that specifically offers trading on the Tuttle Wool.
Exactly. And that's often indirect access. The brokerage handles the complexities. You'll likely need extra documents too: passport, proof of address, tax ID, the usual KYC stuff.
But I remember the sources mentioning something more involved for bigger players, institutions.
Ah, yes. If you're talking serious volume direct access, you're usually looking at qualified foreign investor status, or QFI.
QFI.
Okay, that's the main route for direct trading on Tadawul for non-residents.
Yeah.
But getting QFI status, that's a whole different level.
More regulative.
Highly regulated. Often it's for institutions, sovereign wealth funds, maybe very high net worth individuals. Requires specific approvals, larger minimum investments. It's complex.
So for most listeners, realistically, they're going through an intermediary broker who has that QFI license.
Almost certainly, yes. That broker acts as the gateway.
Okay. So say you find a broker. What are the actual steps to get the account set up?
Let's break it down. Four main steps, usual.
Okay.
One, choose that brokerage. Critically confirm they do support Tadawul trading if you're international.
Don't assume.
Got it. Two, complete registration. Get all your documents in order, passport, tax info, proof of address, standard compliance.
Okay.
Three, fund the account. And here's a key point. Be really aware of transaction fees and, crucially, currency exchange costs.
Ah, converting your home currency to Saudi rials.
Yes. Those exchange rates and fees can definitely impact your returns before you even buy the stock. Something to watch closely.
Good point. And the last step.
Step four, confirm access. Double check what you can actually trade. Is it the direct Remco shares? Or maybe they offer ETFs or mutual funds focused on Aramco or the Saudi market.
So verify the specific product.
Definitely. Because, honestly, navigating the tug of war directly with its different settlement times and local rules, it can be tricky. That's why funds are often seen as, well, an easier first step for many.
All right, so you've jumped through the hoops, found a broker, funded the account. Now, how do you actually want to hold Aramco? Because it seems like there are a few different ways depending on your goals and maybe how much risk you're comfortable taking on.
Exactly. Your strategy really comes into play here. There are three main ways people gain exposure.
Okay.
The first, and kind of the most direct, is just direct stock purchase. Buying the shares right on the tug of war through your broker.
So you get full ownership, benefit directly from price changes, get those dividends.
Correct. Maximum exposure. But it also means you really need to watch the market closely. Oil prices, geopolitics.
Yeah.
It requires attention.
Right. That sounds like it's for someone who's really bullish on oil and okay with that single company risk concentration. What if you want to manage that risk a bit?
Well, that's where diversification tools come in. Option two is using exchange-traded funds, ETFs.
Okay, like a basket of stocks.
Precisely. You can find ETFs that hold Aramco as maybe one part of a broader portfolio of Saudi stocks, or maybe Middle Eastern energy companies.
So it smooths out the ride a bit, reduces the impact if just Aramco has a bad day.
That's the idea. It lowers that concentration risk while still giving you exposure to the sector or region. It's a simpler way in, for sure.
And what if you want someone else to handle all the picking and choosing? More hands off.
Then you'd look at option three, mutual funds. Professionally managed funds. They might focus specifically on Saudi equities or the global energy sector more broadly.
So the fund manager deals with the trading, the selection, less work for the investor.
Substantially less work, yeah. You're outsourcing the management.
Now, there was something in the sources, kind of an aha moment, especially for smaller investors, making it more accessible.
Yes. This is a really important development. Fractional shares.
Meaning you don't need to buy a whole potentially expensive share.
Exactly. Aramco shares aren't cheap. Fractional investing lets you put in, say, $500 or maybe $1,000, whatever you're comfortable with, and own a piece of a share.
That really opens the door for more people.
It absolutely democratizes access to these big, high-profile companies. More and more international brokers are offering this.
So maybe a smart approach could be a mix. Like, hold some direct shares if you want that direct dividend income, but then use ETFs or mutual funds for the core diversification.
That kind of combination strategy makes a lot of sense for many investors. Balancing direct exposure with broader diversification.
Okay, we've talked about the appeal, the access, the different ways to invest. Now, let's put on the brakes a bit, the caution tape section.
Definitely necessary.
Just because it's huge and state-backed doesn't mean it's risk-free. We touched on political factors earlier, but let's really dive in. What are the absolute key risks someone needs to weigh up before putting money into Aramco?
This is critical. Ignoring these risks would be, well, unwise. The sources tend to group them into about five main areas.
Okay.
First, the obvious one, but it's amplified here, market volatility. Aramco's price is tied very directly to oil prices, global demand, economic cycles.
So a dip in oil prices hits harder, faster maybe?
It can feel that way, yes. Uh-huh. Short-term swings can be significant. Second, related to what we discussed, is single company exposure. Concentration risk.
Putting too many eggs in the Aramco basket?
Precisely. Even if oil is doing okay, something specific to Aramco, an operational issue, an accident could hammer the stock price and your portfolio if you're overinvested.
Right. Let's get back to that political angle. How does Saudi policy specifically become an investor risk?
This is risk number three, regulatory and political factors. This is huge for Aramco because it's so intertwined with the Saudi state.
Mm-hmm.
If the government decides to change energy policy, alter taxes, or, and this is key, if OPEC Plus decides on production cuts, Aramco is immediately impacted.
Directly affected by government or cartel decisions, sometimes regardless of market forces.
Exactly. You're not just investing in a company, you're investing alongside, and sometimes subject to, the strategic decisions of a nation state.
Wasn't there a specific event mentioned that really highlighted this kind of physical, geopolitical risk?
Yes, the drone attacks in 2019 on the Abquek and Kurais facilities. That was a stark reminder.
What happened?
It temporarily knocked out a significant portion of global oil supply overnight. Purely a geopolitical event, nothing to do with market fundamentals, but it hit the company hard and showed just how exposed Aramco is to regional instability.
Wow, okay. That's a layer of risk most companies don't face.
Not to that degree, no. It's intrinsic to Aramco. Fourth risk, dividend uncertainty. Yes, they have a history of payouts, but
they aren't guaranteed.
Nothing's guaranteed. Big shifts in oil prices or changes in company strategy could affect the size or consistency of dividends.
Okay. And the last one, specifically for our international listeners.
Yes, number five, foreign investment barriers. We touched on currency risk, the rial versus your home currency. That's ongoing.
And taxes.
Complex tax reporting can be an issue depending on your jurisdiction. And there's always the potential, however small, for changes in market rules that could limit access or make things more difficult for foreign investors. These external factors can chip away at your actual take-home return.
Which brings us right back around to the core message, diversification. Given all those risks, the volatility, the politics, the concentration, just holding Aramco alone seems pretty bold.
Extremely bold.
Yeah.
Probably not advisable for most. If you are going to have exposure to such a specific high-profile energy stock, you absolutely need balance in your portfolio. Ballast, as you said.
So how do you build that resilience? What kind of assets counterbalance something like Aramco?
This is where alternative assets really show their value. We're talking about things that ideally don't move in lockstep with the stock market, or specifically with oil prices.
Stuff outside the usual stocks and bonds.
Exactly. Think assets that are less liquid, maybe generate income, and aren't directly tied to daily market sentiment or oil price swings.
Like real estate. Or maybe private credit. Those come up often.
Those are prime examples. The sources point out they do two key things well in this context. First, they add structural stability. They tend to be less jumpy than stocks day to day.
Less reactive.
Right. And second, they often offer income potential. Things like rental income from real estate or interest from loans. That provides a steady cash flow.
Which can be really valuable when your main growth asset, like an energy stock, might be experiencing price volatility.
Precisely. It smooths the overall return profile.
And the sources mentioned platforms making these kinds of alternatives more accessible now, right? Not just for big institutions.
Yes, that's a key point. There was an example mentioned, a platform like Gamma Assets.
Okay.
It was highlighted as a way individual investors can get into real estate-backed investments, which should be a great complement to stock holdings like Aramco.
So applying diversification principles, but to physical assets, basically.
That's the idea. These platforms are making it easier.
What makes these accessible real estate options a good fit, specifically as a balance to energy stocks?
Well, they often tick a few important boxes. First, accessibility, low minimum investments. You don't need millions to participate anymore.
Opens it up.
Definitely. Second, you get built-in portfolio diversification within the asset class itself. Often, you're investing in a pool of different real estate projects managed professionally. So yeah. You're not betting on just one building.
Spreads the risk even within real estate.
Right. And third, they usually offer good transparency. Regular updates, reports. You can track performance in a way that used to be quite difficult with private assets.
So it makes perfect sense structurally if you've got this potentially high growth but also high risk, politically sensitive asset like Aramco.
Yeah.
You balance it with something steadier, income producing, less correlated, like diversified real estate investments. It helps cushion the portfolio.
That's exactly the strategic thinking required. Balancing the different risk and return profiles across your holdings. #shagtag outro deck.
Okay, so wrapping this up. Investing in Aramco, it's clearly compelling. You get access to this incredibly influential global energy player.
Undeniably appealing, yes. But as we've really dug into today, that access isn't simple. There's technical complexity, especially for foreigners, and unique risks.
Right. We've walked through the why, the global influence, the financials. We've covered the how to dowel access, QFI status, brokers, ETFs, fractional shares.
All the mechanics.
And critically, the what to watch out for, the market swings, the concentration risks, and especially those political and regulatory factors.
Can't stress those enough.
The big takeaway seems to be, yes, there's potential, but you absolutely have to balance it with smart portfolio construction. Right. Diversification isn't optional here.
It's fundamental.
Yeah.
Which leads to, I think, the final thought for you to consider. Given Aramco's deep, unavoidable links to global oil, geopolitics, state decisions, how does strategically pairing that kind of intense, volatile exposure with something completely different, say, steady, income-generating real estate-backed assets, fundamentally shift the risk profile and maybe even the long-term growth potential of your entire investment portfolio?
That's the core calculation.
That's the strategic puzzle you need to solve when you think about adding an asset like Aramco.